Well, you hear that? That's the sound of 2015 pulling you over, people. Suck it.
Let's do it.
Welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined, as always,
by one very white guy.
And you are very white indeed. What's going on, dude?
You know, I'm not feeling particularly white today. I'm like, maybe we should have like a how white is Drew on a scale today.
Scale of 1 to 10? Yeah. So how white are you?
I mean, I'm always on 11, like, just like because I'm the whitest of the white. Yeah. Like, I don't mean to like be proud of that, like, because it's nothing to be proud of, but I'm like super white. Like, you know my background. Like, this is truth.
Facts.
But like, some days I'm feeling like, I'm like aware of, and I'm like okay with my privilege. And it's like, yeah, I'm gonna not be like very white guy. And then some days, like, you're just conditioned to like be very white guy. And it's like,
and today is,
I don't say I'm like, because I'm a little bit down, like maybe like a 3 or 4 on the whiteness scale. How have I been acting?
I don't know. I mean, acting like you, white.
Okay. You know what we should do is have a card, like a business card, and like, you know, the restaurant today, like our server Haley, like, how white was I today? On a scale of 1 to 10, was it 10 white? You have to have like people. Like, who would be 10 white? I don't know.
Right.
Justin Bieber. Mitt Romney. I don't know. Was it Mitt Romney white or more like, you know, Brooklyn white dude white? I don't know. Tell people where you can find us.
Well, if this is your first time joining us, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's JAWN. Or you can go to our website, interracialjohn.com. Or you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, at Interracial John. Again, JAWN. And we love feedback.
You know, I'm going to go into a moment here and get my voice of God with the feedback. Because, you know, like the one time I kind of like guilted everybody. I was like, hey, the fuck? You haven't given any feedback to the John. You're listening to our content. We need to have feedback. It worked. We got some phone calls. We got some feedback. So I'm going to go subliminal. You will leave feedback for the John. You will leave feedback for the John. You will leave feedback for the John.
All right. Is God done now?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, cool. Well, you can leave feedback in a number of ways. You can leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. And if it's 5 stars and it's not crazy, we'll read it here on the show. You can send us an email.
I like the addendum. If it's not crazy.
Yeah, we can't do
it. If it's 5 stars
and
it's not like, but what you've left in there is like, and nobody's done this. And I kind of like, you and I like joked that I could have done it to Rod, like with the black guy he says, but it seems like a dick move. But like, write a 5-star review. And you could be like, listen to my other podcast. Like, we'd read that shit, right? Like, if it wasn't like
I said,
bullshit,
it's not crazy
nut job, but it was like,
it's the
hey,
only rule.
I love the John, but oh, by the way, here's my other shit.
Here's my shit that I'm doing.
I'm
yes.
Like, you know, what was the thing I really wanted to do with Rod? Was leave like a, like.
Leave a review and be like how much we love,
right.
He loved us.
Like in his voice, like, oh, this is Rod. You might know, this is Rodimus Prime. You might know me from shows like The Black Guy Who Tips. And I want to introduce you to the world's greatest podcast, The Interracial John. Since I've been listening to John, I've lost 30 pounds, won $50,000. You know, just like something ludicrous. But like, you know, David Copperfield in length, like, you know, thousand. But he wouldn't have read it. He'd have been like, Drew, are you kidding me? Fuck out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the review, but nah.
Yeah. And you can also send us an email. Send that to interracialjohn@gmail.com. And if you're so lazy that all you can do is just talk, you can give us a voicemail. You can call 657-JOHNERS. That's 657-JAWNERS. And if it's under 3 minutes, we will play it here on the show. Shout out to Rod and Karen from The Black Guy Who Tips for our general feedback rules. And yeah.
Yeah, feedback. So we need feedback. Give some feedback.
Yes, leave us the feedback, because otherwise we think we're talking to just each other, which is fine, but whatever.
Well, you said you did your, at the Web of Change, you did a little like a symposium on podcasting.
Yeah.
And I think you told me that you told them that like, really, I just assume nobody listens.
I just convinced myself that literally nobody will listen to anything that we say, because it makes it easier to just say whatever the fuck we want to say.
It does. It does.
So we want the feedback, but don't go too crazy with the little question. Don't expect too much from us.
And Hiroshi, this is not you. You've been a doll. We love it.
Yes. Thank you for all of your voicemails, all your feedback. You're
good.
Yeah.
You get a pass.
Yeah. And Carl, you haven't even been calling in. Just
the,
saying.
The
about
fuck?
To use your number, lose your number
AP
one.
AP Carl.
John status.
Oh, Johnner. That's.
Get on it, dude. Okay. Anywho. So we've been apart because I've been gone like almost a whole month. And we finally.
Did we tell it? Was it 7 days in October?
I think 6 or 7 or something.
You've been home.
Yeah.
That's some bullshit.
It's bad.
I love you for it.
But I'm back.
And I appreciate that.
The road was rough. real rough. But what was going on with you while I was away? I got into some shenanigans.
I got sick as fucking hell, and I'm still dealing with it. It's I guess the diagnosis is diverticulitis. Uh-huh. But like the whole like. Indulge me for a moment from the beginning to like the end with this doctor.
How long are you going to take for this story?
Just a few minutes. It's just
don't go too in depth.
I won't go to it, but the number of mistakes and missteps, like there was like 13 different red flags of like, you shouldn't be using this doctor. Right. And again, I fully admit proximity, bad call, but it was like, he forgot to tell me to be on a liquid diet when I left. He ordered a CT scan, but didn't tell me about it. And then forgot to give me any information and prescription for it, called me the next day, is like, hey, did you get that CT scan? Like, but no, you were supposed to order it. Oh, okay, hold on. Like, it was just bizarre. The CT scan itself had, it was a half an hour out of town. He calls me at 5:45. Okay, he's like, tells me like, oh, I've got to work with your insurance, we're trying to figure it out. Calls me at 5:45 and says, oh, by the way, your CT scan is tomorrow at 8 a.m. I'm like, what? Like, I got to pick my wife up at the airport at 8:45. This is not convenient. Like, I wouldn't have chosen this time. And again, I think it's that his normal patient population, he's like, he's the doctor. He tells him what to do and they don't question him. So I'm giving him like pushback maybe for, you know, not common for him from a patient. And he got like all defensive about it. Oh, you know, I was all day with your insurance and I'm trying to get it done and it's really important and, you know, you need to do this. And, you know, they only had two appointments and I did the best I could. Like, it was like, what? Like, you could have fucking called me. And then he says like, well, you know, maybe you can try and reach him. And this is again, 5:45 Friday night. So I was like, well, all right, where is this place? Give me the number. Give me the fucking details. I call the place. They close at 5:30.
Of course they did.
Of course they did. And it got worse. I get there. I make arrangements for you to get picked up at the airport. I go out, you know, this place is a half hour away. I drive out there at 8 a.m.
I forgot to tell you that when you posted that, like that same day, somebody else I knew in Grand Rapids was like, hell no, I'll never go to wherever that town is you had to go for testing. It's the worst place ever, literally.
Well, it was like a non-urgent care facility for Mercy Health. Like, that's the big, you know, there's Mercy and I think the other one's Butterworth are the two big ones. Or Spectrum. Mercy or Spectrum. So this is a Mercy Health, like, facility. But anyway, I had no issues with it other than the doctor that didn't fucking tell me shit. So I show up to this place and the check-in nurse is like, you know, like, oh, like, where's your work order? Like, what are we doing today? I'm like, I don't know. I felt bad. Like, you know me, like I've got that little bit of that like East Coastness and I'm already like, pissed.
I have no fucking clue what I'm doing ma'am.
I'm already kind of mad at this doctor. And so I'm irritated. And when she's like, well, what are you doing today? Like, where's your, I'm like, I don't fucking, oh my God. Are you kidding me? Like, I got like visibly like agitated and here in like Southwest Michigan, people are like, whoa, like they get kind of like, you know, their cackles up. So I had to be like, I'm very sorry. I'm not upset with you in the least. I don't know you. You're just checking me in. I apologize. But this is kind of ridiculous. Like, they didn't tell me anything. I was supposed to not do it. Do it. It's all over the place. End of story short, I've got to drink barium. Like, it's a liquid to, like, radioactively see on the CT scan. And it's got to be in your system for 2 hours before the CT scan. So I'm like, Jesus, like, no, I could have picked this up at Walgreens the night before. I could have come out here the night before. No one told me this. If I had known that I needed to drink this shit 2 hours before, I would have driven there Friday night, got the horse shit, drank it at 6 a.m. and had this done the right way. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But no, I had to go out there, drink it, come back, get you at the airport. And like, you know, like, word to the wise, if you ever got a drink mocha flavored barium, be near a toilet.
Ew, they had color for it.
Oh yeah, she's like, you want mint chocolate chip, Jesus, strawberry,
all of that sounds horrible.
And you know the thing about
mint chocolate chip barium,
I wish I could describe why the texture was off, but like, you know, when
it's,
you,
like, chalky though. I thought,
no, it's not even, I mean,
is it like silvery?
No, it was creepy. It made like crackling pop rock sounds as you,
ew,
drank it, like, and in your throat, like, it was like,
oh no. Okay, don't talk about it anymore.
Barium particles.
You're grossing everybody out.
Yeah, it was bad. But so I pick you up at the airport, damn near like shit my pants, like had to go home, I'm puking, like I got to go back to this thing, fucking drink another fucking thing in this barium. I didn't even tell you this part. I drank the other bit of barium, like, you know, like in the driveway.
I thought you like spilled it on yourself or something.
I'm going to be honest with Johners, and I don't want to say I lied to you, but I was afraid, I was embarrassed to admit it. I threw up on myself.
Well, why do you have to say that now?
Just because it was like the whole experience was horrible. So I like tried to, like, it was one of those vomits where like all of a sudden your mouth starts salivating. It's like, I was like, oop, got a little baby vomit on myself. So I'm going to now to do this CT scan. I didn't tell you this part either. The intravenous thing they gave me was the weirdest feeling I've ever had in my life.
And the, like, color thing?
It was the contrast, and right. It was another, like, radioactive element.
I've had that before.
Well, the one that makes your throat really hot, and then she tells me, like, oh, first you're going to feel a weird sensation of heat, it's probably weird. In your throat. It was, like, burning. Yeah. Very, like, this doesn't seem healthy at all.
Yeah,
so like, I get the CCs in. It is diverticulitis, and I went back for the follow-up. But the whole thing was just, like, what the fuck kind of doctor are you?
This not is a very good one. We need to find you a new doctor that we actually get recommended from somebody.
Yeah, it wasn't.
It's because I wasn't here. You just like, I'm just going to do the easiest thing.
I was sick for like 2 weeks.
I know.
You begged me to call the doctor for a long time.
I just begged you to go see somebody because you had a fever for way too long.
If I had a GP that I liked, I would have been, you know, like back in Jersey, I would have seen the doctor much earlier because I had a doctor.
Right.
We just hadn't found a doctor, and I was being lazy, and shame on
this
me.
This is what happens.
This is what happens.
Barium vomit
you get
in the
barium
car.
Barium vomit in the car. That's what your whack-ass fucking proximity-based
exactly.
search a doctor. So you know our other mutual friend, Dr. Masmood the Mustache?
Yep, I'm aware of him.
We were talking about, I don't know what we were talking about, but somehow the orgasm mushroom, the
Oh, we talked about
lady.
That. Yeah,
on
the
last
show.
Yeah, the Veiled Lady mushroom. So I mentioned it to him, and I'm talking about it, and I was like, dude, you should listen to our podcast, you asshole. But so I mentioned the Veiled Lady orgasm mushroom, and right away he goes into some sort of, like, weird, like, I'm the fucking, like, he wanted to be the, like, shaman, like,
he was gonna,
orgasm
like, Jim,
master.
Jim Jones, the...
Yeah, like, the he had, he's like, I'll have, like, a... It'll be, like, a ritualistic box, and I'll open it for all of them. It'll be, like, a sniffing circle. And, like, it was just, like, super bizarre. And it cracks me up, because, like, you heard about this mushroom, and, like, the first thing you thought was to be...
I'm going
to
control it. Right. I'm gonna dole it out to the women.
I don't want to call him a... I don't know what's the right word.
Maybe
philanderer, philanderer,
man about
a Lothario, turn. A Lothario's maybe
Lothario
right
is not the right word.
No, is that good?
Not good, but it's a little more skill than he has.
Oh shit! I hope he doesn't listen to this show now. Don't hate the minor league player.
Yeah, exactly. Game. Hate the small ball game.
Hate the small. He ain't Daniel Murphy.
No.
He ain't slugging 1,000.
No.
But he's... Anyway.
Whatever.
So his current, I guess, girlfriend, paramour, whatever, she's very young. And I've given him some flack. Like, we're in our 40s. She's in her 20s. Like, is Remy very young? And I've totally given him flack about it and, you know, talked about it. But so during this, like, orgasm shaman-like weirdness, she puts her fork down and she's like, I'm sorry. At what point did men become the arbiters of who and how and what this mushroom does? I didn't know that happened. Like, she goes into this, like, a little bit of, like, a feminist kind of, like, rant, but he keeps going on and, like, Sibian machines are involved now and,
oh,
fucking, like, the fucking what's the orgasm meditation? Like, we were talking about the telodildonic toys that we talked about, like, a bunch of months ago, where the
right where you know, can use your phone or whatever.
Yeah, not your phone, but like there's
it's like a
penis sleeve and a dildo, and they communicate across the internet. So, like, you know, you put the dildo in, and I get squeezed in the penis sleeve thing. But anyway, we're talking about all this shit, and Todd just keeps going. Oh, I said, goes deeper and deeper, and she's like, "Man, why are we friends?" I was like, all right, you know. Kudos. It was funny. And I'm giving him shit. I don't think he really wants to be a fucking, like, arbiter of, like, shaman orgasms, but...
But he would be.
He would
just
turn
saying
it down.
He would be.
So you didn't hear, I asked you about it, Anthony Hamilton's rendition of Watch Me Whip, the spiritual version?
No, I have not heard that.
I'm going to have to let it rip here. Hold on.
That's doing entirely too much.
I'm here for Anthony Hamilton.
No, not me.
No.
I'm just saying, not everything needs to be done that way.
Anthony's been having a bad fucking week with Mackie, so we can let Anthony Hamilton have a little bit of props.
Whatever.
So here's another, I don't say it happened, but so Cleveland, the likely non-indictment for Tim Rice's killers, as that's been progressing, I've noticed various groups moving to have sort of petitions, get the government involved. And I don't know why it seems like counterproductive to me to have like four different petitions. Like there's a Move On one, there's a change.org one. And I know I'm hard on Surge showing up for racial justice. And I know the people behind it, like personally have met them. And, you know, I think they're doing more than many other groups of white folk, and they've got a big database, but they have their own petition engine, and something about that's just like, why?
And it's
like,
not just using salsa?
No, it's literally like it's their website showing up for racial justice.
Yeah,
and
but salsa plugs into your website, but it still feeds into a single other place. Like it's like Pico uses it. So you would go to your website. I'm not saying they do. I'm just saying it doesn't seem like they even have the money to have their own proprietary.
Let's go look.
Petition system.
How would I know if it's salsa?
It would say it on, like, when you do go to the link, it would say it at the top.
Okay, let's see here. Do. Action, because it's an action. No.
Well, this is not making for riveting podcast. So,
well if continue. I find it, I'll see. Oh, here's the thing. But how would you know if it's
like click to go to the actual like petition?
Okay,
click. And then see what the URL
is. It's their URL, and it's who you are, your name, add your signature. You can do it by text.
That's weird. Yeah, I don't know.
And I said I don't know why.
Surprising.
It rubs me the wrong way. It just seems I don't know. I don't know what the purpose of having your own like there shouldn't there be a canonical main place that all the stuff.
Sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. Depends on how together the work on the ground is and like what they're asking. So I don't know.
Well, that was my week. Let's hear about
your week. Well, my week. I was in New York and I was in Boston for a few days, so I got to see Mom. But it was just like all of my other trips, just balls to the wall, working the entire time that I was there. So I had one day off. I took the first day that I was there off and I spent some time with Mom. We went shopping and I just relaxed for a little bit. The rest of the time I was working. I was in Boston for Thursday and Friday at the UUA headquarters meeting with some other black UUs to talk about our plans for General Assembly in Columbus this year. And that went well. The meetings went good, I think. You know, I've had one of those like uncomfortable moments where like a white person's heard of my work and they like start crying talking to me about it.
Can you, I don't like dig deeper into that, but like,
I don't really want to dig any deeper because the person's a very nice person. It's happened to me multiple times. That's always what I mean, with though. UUs, and I don't know how to react. Like, it makes me very uncomfortable. And usually I say, please don't cry. Like, I literally say those exact words, please don't cry, because it's just strange. And I find it very weird and awkward, and I don't really know what else to say.
I find it, you know, like I'm familiar with the, like, you know, there's like the stages of grief and dying. I think there's stages of being more awoke to the, you know, genocide and suffering of black people, awoke to supremacy's impact and history and so forth and so on. And one of those stages definitely is like very guilty. Like you just feel really bad and you're like, oh my God.
But this isn't the guilty cry that I get. It's different. It's something else. It's something very strange. It's just like,
And this is not like I said, I've witnessed it. And
it's
weird. And then there's people that will say like, oh, I see you in your work and I want to cry. Like, but why?
That's
an odd response.
It's very strange.
You know, you should know.
So officially white tears make me uncomfortable.
You should now say, oh, don't cry. Just support me. Just donate. Here's the link.
Don't cry. Here's my PayPal address.
that's exactly right.
I'm going to just start saying that. So
don't cry.
White people, if you want to cry.
Here's my PayPal address.
Here's where you can send me. Your tears and funds.
Much more effective.
Yes.
Dollars.
I'll take those. but the offices were pretty cool and they had a couple of like interactive screens on the first floor. One of them, it took like a picture of you and you got to type in where you were from and like what faith means to you or something. And that was kind of neat. You could see where other people had come in. And then the other one was like fully interactive. It had like a like 3D you know, camera that moved with your body and you got to like press things to like go deeper into like more information about it. So that was kind of cool. And I mean, it was just neat office space. They just moved in there. They bought it in like kind of this more industrial area and they have four floors that they purchased. Actually, I think they bought the whole building, but four floors they're occupying right now. And then there's two more floors they're renting out. And I think eventually they'll occupy those as well.
Was it downtown in Boston or was it?
Yeah, it's like near like the Children's Museum. So it's like really, you can walk there from the South Street station, the train station.
It's okay. Close I mean, stuff. You know, religion.
They used to be on Beacon Street, so they were very, like, in the middle of everything. Like, and it was, like, an old building. They sold the building, and the building that the people that bought it just started putting the, because it was, like, more townhouses, and people were living in, like, different ones.
Yeah.
And they're selling one of them, the first one they've renovated, for $9 million.
Well, I was going to say buildings, real estate ownership for a faith-based organization is not only critical, but it's so the government allows you to be a not-for-profit, but you got to do something with the money. You can't be a not-for-profit and have coffers of millions and millions of dollars.
Unless you're the Catholic Church.
Yeah, correct, because they made their own country.
Just saying.
Well, that's why you make your own country.
I know.
You make a sovereign entity.
I'm just making a distinction.
You're right. You're actually, the Catholic Church can sit on littles and littles of money. And that, and art and all kinds of things. Yeah. You're right. But like Church of Scientology, like their real estate holdings is billions of dollars
because
they got to do something with all this money they're raking in and bringing in. But it's not uncommon. When we were in Cleveland, I was at the...
Oh, the UCC.
At the UCC. And it's a gorgeous
beautiful
facility.
Building, yeah.
Their chapel was based off of the Amistad ship. And it was just like an incredible space.
Yeah,
like really unbelievable. Nice. And they're selling it because it's worth tons more money otherwise.
Yeah.
Put the space elsewhere.
Yeah, so that was cool. And then I got to do some work with Justice League as well, which was I ran social media and actually went and participated in the Rise Up October march and rallies in New York City on Saturday, which were pretty cool.
Am I not mistaken? I saw Mom there with you?
Yeah, I brought my mom. She came to the end rally. I didn't have her march, so she met me in the city later, and then I went and picked her up, and then we went to the end part of
it. Was that her first action?
She'd never been to an action before. She was very cute.
Have a march, or did we just see a march?
Well, she did do the march, the MLK, but I don't know if that's an action. Like, I don't know. I mean, it was, but it was much more like church people. Do you know what I mean?
It certainly wasn't disruptive.
Right. And this was a little more disruptive.
That one had a permit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this had a permit too for parts of it, but whatever.
Okay. Is that where you, that was when you took the side?
Yeah. So because I was there with Justice League and I was running social justice, their social media accounts, all of them, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. So I was like actively working. We all of us had to go on stage. I was like taking pictures. I was periscoping. I was like doing a bunch of stuff. So we were with the families and with other people that were involved in supporting them and like speaking on stage and stuff like that. So when
you get some access,
right. So, we were in the thick of things, where the Quentin Tarantino was and where Cornel West was and all this stuff. And so at one point, they had staged all the families and those of us that got to speak in one space, and everybody else, the other marchers, were going to march in a separate spot. And then we were kind of meeting up with them. This was to ensure when we arrived at Bryant Park that the families were in the front, which made complete logistical sense. Great. So as we go to start walking, with the families, I look over my shoulder, and why is Remy, a.k.a. Michael Rapaport,
just pause
right
a second.
Over my shoulder?
It's been 20-odd years since that movie came out, and you stay calling him Remy.
He'll be Remy till the day he motherfucking dies.
You're not better than me.
Malik. Anyway, so he was right behind me. So I texted you. I was like, oh, why is Remy right behind me this whole fucking
and again,
march?
Just killing me that you still call.
And you're like, ooh, take a picture. And I was like, okay, I'll take a picture. So I take a picture. I take a selfie. And he's right over my shoulder. And I give the biggest side eye I possibly can. Like, this motherfucker. And I sent it to you. So
amused. I laughed literally out loud. Like, rumble laugh.
It was
funny. I tweeted it right away. And it wasn't like anyone loved it. It's just a joke between you and me.
Yeah.
But, oh, fuck. It's like, just like, because you're in the foreground. And he's full on in the background, and you've got this
yeah.
Find a way to post it on the underneath the.
Oh yeah,
the show.
I can put I'll upload it and I'll put a link.
Yeah, like in girl.
Yeah,
yeah,
I'll put it in
places.
There. Yeah, I don't have to. I can just put it on the page.
It's
so
worth it.
Yeah, it was funny. So that was cool, and the march was fine, and of course normal stuff. One weird thing I saw, a new NYPD unit called. Oh gosh, no, I can't remember what it was called. It was called something like Disorder Control Unit or something like that. That's clearly in response to all the protesting that's been going on. So I found that pretty interesting.
Yeah, because they keep all that fucking they have the kettling fucking shit.
Yeah,
they got all kind of, New York's a little bit.
Oh, and they were they had their and it's all these little things that they do to intimidate people that are out there. All of them had 20
twist ties,
wristband, yeah. You know, plastic handcuffs, like all on their belts. Like, what the fuck? It literally was like moms and sisters and fathers, like, grieving for their lost children and loved ones.
And someone's going to fucking put your mom on the ground and like, twist tie and shit.
You know, it's
dude.
Like ridiculous.
The fuck?
And then there was some follow. Quentin Tarantino had a spot to speak, and there had been a little bit of like, you know, are we letting people speak or are we only centering the families? And so he was like, I'm here to support people. I'm here because I have a conscience, but I'm going to give up my time so that more of the families can speak. And he left the mic, literally. I'm not joking. This was the extent of him at the march. And then he marched the entire way in his, you know, defense. I'll say that. Remy, I can't say the same for, but Quentin marched the entire way. The next day, the head of the New York City Police union called for a boycott of all Quentin Tarantino movies.
Because he gave time to the...
Yeah, fucking, well, because he was supporting, you know, the stop mass incarceration.
And I have to say, good on Quentin. I appreciate it. And I think my response to you is that was good. Even better would be if he didn't make blaxploitation movies with the N-words littered throughout it. But
it would be.
It's good. And plus, you had a couple things that you mentioned, and I would say fall under the general category traveling while black.
Yeah, I always have my traveling while black stories, which are the worst. And every time I travel, I talk with other black people about it, and they're like, yes, we have to put like our full armor on. I was talking with Charlene Carruthers from VYP the other day. She goes, yeah, sometimes I'll just wear like the most like, you know, unapologetically black, not your respectable Negro shirt, just so people be like, just don't fucking talk to me, don't touch me, don't come fucking near me, don't have anything to do with
and
me.
And I'll just be keeping 100, like, you know, not even low key, just like straight to your face. You generally have an air of don't fuck with me, like as a human being on this planet. You like bifurcate the air, like, fuck out my way. Like, it's like you'd really have zero.
I like
fucks.
To refer. I generally cultivate a fuck I look like kind of like vibe. That's what I try to generally put out in the world. Like, fuck I look like.
Like, you know, like some like hard dudes would be like, I fucking wish a motherfucker would motherfucker. Like, they got right. The, like, you have like the female version of that, like, don't even fucking don't try even. A bitch. She's like,
yeah. So, you don't need the t-shirt. There's always all of these problems traveling while black. So, the most common one is like just an affront to your status in the world because of your blackness. So, this will play out a multitude of ways. This trip, it was, I didn't hear because there was a lot going on in the boarding area. And so, I didn't hear what they said, like who was boarding. Okay. And I happened to be flying first class. I, you know, got an upgrade. And, I walked up and I was like, oh, I didn't hear who's boarding next. And the woman looks at me and she goes, the important people.
No, she didn't.
Yeah.
The important people?
Yeah, the important people.
So I don't know if it was your tweet, but I saw the interactions where someone was saying that, and it might have been like Goldie Taylor or Reign of April, somebody, like, same fucking thing. Like, they'll be flying.
It was Cheska Lee.
Cheska Lee. They'll be flying first class.
It happens to me all the time.
And she walks up and she's like, boarding. And like, this is first class.
Yeah, yeah.
I know, motherfucker. It happens. I got a ticket.
It happens to all of us all the time. So that was just like a common one. But I had a couple of like really like obnoxious one. I was in the security line coming home at Newark Airport, and this white woman and her husband were behind me. And this bitch bumped into me like 4 times in a 10-minute time frame.
In the queue.
Yeah, in the queue. Like, ha 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 ha, bump. Bitch, why are you touching me? I would move up. She have to get closer to me. Just give me my fucking space. I don't want you touching me. So that was number one. Then, a separate story was I was at the Boston train station waiting for my friend Carlton to get out of the bathroom. And this guy literally hit me in my arm. Like, ugh, get out of my way. And I kicked him. So there's that.
Yeah. And when you told me that, I fucking lost my shit. I'm like, what was this? When did it happen? What the fuck are you talking about? Hit me. Show me a heart. This is not acceptable. I was pissed. I'm still pissed.
Yeah. Well, it happens when you're not with me. So I say that all the time. Like, I'm used to traveling with you. And like, this year of traveling by myself so much has really like shown me how much of a cocoon I've been in the last 15 years of not having to travel by myself. That I have like your sphere of white privilege around me. Mm. And that extends to me because you're with me.
And I think in the scenario you're describing, like my, like, oh, am I white? Like on a scale of 1 to 10, I think my size adds a significant component.
Sure.
I'm not just a white guy.
Yeah,
I'm a 6 foot four, 250 pound white guy.
Yeah.
You're not going to probably be like, oh, you know, this blah, blah, like saying shit. They're going to come crazy off to you while I'm standing next to you holding your hand.
Definitely not. So anyway, so that happened in Boston. And then I'll talk about this altercation at the train station because it's a little bit more interesting. But the final thing that happened was I'm at TSA. I'm going through and like I travel a lot. So I'm like fucking pro. Got my shoes off. Everything's ready. I don't even wear shit with pockets anymore because right. I just find it not to be worth it.
You're ready to go.
So I'm just fucking let's just fucking do this. I try and like literally travel in leggings whenever possible. That's the level I'm at with this shit.
So, I'm on the male equivalent of like not quite sweatpants, but right. like something in between like right. climbing pants, like
so,
plastic.
So way. I'm standing there like waiting to go through and I hear this like commotion behind me. And one, this black TSA agent is like, you can't do that to this white woman. She's like, well, I was just trying to, and she starts explaining.
But when you say that, she was trying to reach into the scanner
right,
and pull her
and
shit
pull
back.
Something
like,
back.
Like your shit
or
went
something.
Through the scanner. Right. And like, now you're like, oh, wait a minute. You're like, don't do that.
You can't do that.
You
right.
can't do that.
So she says to him very obnoxiously, well, I'm sorry, right? And he looks at her and he just didn't say anything. And she goes, now's when you say, I accept your apology.
Oh, man.
And
now's when you say?
Now's when you say. So I chuckled a little bit, like just listening to it. And she goes, geez, I said I was sorry. That's the right thing to do. You're supposed to say, I accept your apology. And the guy looked at her again, turned around and says to his coworkers, this woman really is trying to tell me how to accept her apology. And I burst out laughing. It was the funniest shit I'd heard in like 2 weeks. It
didn't address her at all. Just
no,
like,
no. He's like, yeah, right. Okay. So that was pretty funny. And then the last thing was this weird thing that happened at Secaucus Station. I was coming home super late from, one of the things I was coming home late from either Thursday or Wednesday. I think it was Friday when I was coming home from Boston.
Back
to my mom's house. And I had like a small, like maybe 20-minute layover in Secaucus switching trains to go to Hackensack. And so I'm sitting there, you know, reading my book or listening to podcasts, whatever, on a bench. And there's a woman sitting on the other side of the bench for me. And there's nobody in between us. So I get up to stretch my legs about 5 minutes or so before my train's supposed to come in. And I notice this guy comes up behind this woman and stands like on top of her. Like so close, I was like, oh, he must be with her. That's okay. How close he's standing to her. And she's on her phone and doesn't notice him at all. And I see he's literally reading everything she's doing on her phone and then like doing stuff on his phone.
What? That's a strange interaction.
Very like invasive. Like I would be really uncomfortable like knowing that it was happening. But I look over and I was just about to literally just say, hey, are you guys together? Like just a quick like
you
just
okay,
to alert
sis?
Her.
Yeah.
And he starts like picking his nose and flicking boogers everywhere. And all of a sudden it occurred to me that he looked a little unstable, right?
Okay. And
so I was like, geez, I don't want to really like get into like a, you know, an argument with this dude or him go fucking crazy or do something. So I go to security and I grab them and I'm like, listen, I explain the situation. I tell them what's going on. They're like, oh yeah, I see him. We'll go over there right now. So they went over there and then my train came and I had to leave. So I don't know what happened, but it was really creepy and really weird. And
on that same NJ Transit, me, you and our friends, Carl, were going to New York. And there was again, very eerily similar. Again, weirdo white guy.
Yeah.
There's a white woman, and I'm not paying entirely attention. It's a 90-minute train ride, so you know, get your headphones. Like you said, podcast, we're talking, whatever. I'm not entirely paying attention, but at some point, I've made the like mental conclusion. Well, they must be together. Like they're sitting in the same row, they're chatting a bunch. Like they must be together. There's a lot of communication.
Right.
And at the end of the train ride, she stays on the train. We're in Penn Station. The train's like, boop, all off. Like, at the end of the line. Like, it doesn't go any further.
Right.
She stays on the train and is talking to another person. And I overhear that she's nervous. She doesn't want to go out there. I'm like, whoa, what's going on? And then I think it was Carl came in and said, yeah, I saw him be kind of weird. And she said, listen, I don't want to talk to you anymore. Please leave me alone. Like, so again, just as a like, it's just, hi, I'm just talking. I'm just trying to pick him. This guy was literally, I don't know what his deal was, but he was so invasive of her space and time. When I say he was stalking on the platform, we got off. And so, he's like bald-headed. Like he was very identifiable. And we go up.
He was
up,
stalking, like pacing.
Pacing. And she's fucking sweating bullets. She's right. Nervous. She's got a bag. She's traveling by herself. Like maybe she's not from New York. And so we go up and I do the same thing. Grab a, you know, first officer I can see. I'm like, hey, this guy, he's down there. And out of the woodwork came like four dudes in undercover. I never
like, who is he?
I'm like, Where did all you guys come from? Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, and
Lynn got him. And
No, they followed him. They followed him. But I don't point it out as like, hey, we used the police in the appropriate manner or whatever, whatever. Or it was white people. But I pointed out in that these are women.
Yeah, we're so vulnerable, always women. Always women, like, at, you know, at prey.
And I don't know if this guy was like, unstable. He very well could. He's been like, I thought we were having a conversation. I was trying to
pick your number, once somebody says, like, I don't want to talk to you anymore, and you're waiting for them.
It's not that.
It doesn't matter if you're unstable or not. It's inappropriate. And that's the point. And scary. Like, she was by herself.
And dragging a big suitcase. Yeah. She's not able to run or nothing.
It's not cool.
It was definitely, scary is the right word. I feel, I'm sorry that you had to experience traveling while black and that I wasn't there with my giant whiteness to protect you.
I'm sorry, I jumped the gun.
I thought we were doing the news. The real what now?
I was gonna say the real reason why I actually was on this trip in the first place starts off our news, so let's get it going.
The news is coming on.
So finally, after months and months and months and months and months of planning and prepping and marketing and promotion and everything that went into it, Women's Freedom Conference happened last Sunday.
We got to give like a bunch of dings. Let me get an air horn. It was awesome. And if you didn't attend it, it was online. It was free, and it wasn't the speakers were all women.
Women of color.
The speakers were all women of color, but the knowledge was for everybody. And I found it. It may be the most enjoyable online virtual event webinar I've attended. The content was phenomenal.
Yeah, the content was amazing. The tech was amazing. Everything
Honey did
was
a great
so
job
good.
With the live stream.
Forget it.
Yeah.
She just like killed it. She designed the whole thing.
I tweeted her and said, like, I said something like, you know, do you all know how not simple a thing these streaming events for thousands of people are? And she wrote back, thanks, but it was tens of thousands. I was like, damn.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that's not on her, like, that's the live stream's like server capacity. But trust, man, to I think there might have been one where the feed went out one time.
Yeah.
Over a 13-hour day with fucking tens of thousands of people. That shit is hard. This is what I do that for a living on a smaller scale. That shit's hard.
Yeah, I told FJ that. Hard. I was like, Drew does this for his job.
Yeah, people pay me a lot of money.
And he was like, this shit was the slickest shit he's seen.
I want to ask her about some of the stuff they used.
Yeah, I mean, it was really just amazing. It was such a pleasure for me personally to have been involved with it, especially this first year out. And can I
toot your horn? How many people were impacted on Twitter? 500,000?
Yeah, about that.
It was trending globally for a bit.
It was trending number one in the U.S. for about 4 hours.
For 4 hours straight. Yeah. You had, I don't know the numbers, but I think it's going to end up, you know, upwards of 15, 20, 50,000 unique hits, right?
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of views. And the entire marketing, the only thing you all spent, there was no ads. Nobody fucking like put ads in the paper. Nobody ran commercials. The entire marketing was you, right?
Well, yes.
That's awesome. Come on. I know you don't like to toot your own horn, but you did on a shoestring with Twitter and social media and making your own graphics and doing the Women's Freedom Friday chats. You did a bang-up job. You got those people. Yes, Feminista, the content was amazing, but they knew about it because of what you did. And I thought you did an awesome job. And it was an awesome event.
It really was incredible, amazing. And so I got to go to the keynote address in New York City, which is what I was there for. My mom came. My sister came. And Lawrence Hunter was there. And it just was, I mean, amazing. Yeah. The whole thing was.
And
so,
I said to you, Feminista, and I haven't really seen much of her video. I see a lot of her on Twitter and hear her on Twib and stuff. But to see her keynote, it, again, just like something came through the computer screen that was just like, I don't know how to describe it other than power. Just she stood in her power like when black women are like that, I'm in awe. It's just like, wow.
Yeah.
You know? And then the final keynote, Hunter Lewis, oh my Jesus. You know, like, I think you had the keynote at M4BL was a black trans woman as well. Marsha, is that it?
No, Major. She wasn't a keynote, but one of the first speakers was Miss Major.
Miss Major. So, same kind of deal. Like, Miss Major and Lourdes just, fuck me, just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It was like just an all day masterclass and fucking badass woman of color.
Yeah.
I just, it was so good. You can watch all of the videos and sessions on demand. You can go to womensfreedomconference.com to access that. I did want to quote Feminista just talking about why they put the conference on. And she says, conferences can really gather people together and you can learn so much and share so much, but you also know that it's cost prohibitive and difficult for people with different disabilities, for parents who can't afford childcare, for people who are economically disenfranchised to save money, travel, and pay the cost of conferences. So often these conferences gather together those who can, not those who really want to, and we wanted to change that. So
yeah, I was and the events that I do are for the same reason, because they're geographically dispersed people typically in, you know, not always first world countries that they're not going to be able to get to these things.
Yeah.
The only way they're going to be able to access this content is online, you know? And I thought the whole thing was awesome.
Yeah. It
just
was so
awesome.
So good.
So good. Yep. Really blown away. So, in the inverse, there was apparently an all male panel that was hopefully going to helpfully tell women how to advance in technology.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So it's the Seattle event marketed as Women in Tech, the Male Perspective. It was a, ARA mentors program. But you know, something a little off, but it featured five well-known Seattle men in tech. Avvo founder CEO Mark Britton, Smartsheet CEO Mark Matter, SquareHub co-founder Dave Cotter, Appetentive engineer VP Charlie Morse, and angel investor Jonathan Sposato, who had famously declared he would only back companies with at least one female founder. But there's also, I guess it was a token woman, moderator Anna Frazetto, who's with the IT recruiting firm Harvey Nash. But here's their marketing collateral. It said, during this panel, male leaders from different facets of the Seattle technology and digital community will share their perspective on what is necessary for women to play a more significant role, both in volume and influence, in the tech industry. So, yeah, male panel. They're going to tell all you ladies how to get into tech.
Okay.
It was...
And what was the outcome? What were their jewels of information they had to drop on folks?
You know, I don't know how the information on the actual details, but they kept talking about... so the individual wrote some complaints like, hey, this is kind of offensive. You got all male panel telling what to do. And they wrote back defending it. And I don't have the follow-up, but... it was like $20 to get in. And,
Jesus.
You know, it was just kind of ridiculous, dude.
Uh-huh.
Just they have an all-male panel, and it was like the words, the framing, necessary, you know. And in their responses to the author that complained, they said, you know, it's just all the stupid defenses, you know, can't be easy, it's just stupid.
It's just crazy to me because you're talking to women about what's wrong with them. Like, the problem is not the women. The problem is the system that you, as men, in the system control and can affect.
Yeah, and that
so
was the
to sit and say, here's what you got to do. How about y'all stop being fuck-ass men and fix shit? How about you do that? Let's flip this shit around. Have a whole fucking room of women tell you what the fuck you need to do. Ugh, yeah. That irritates me.
It is.
And to pay, to ask women to pay.
Money. Yeah, $20.
The fuck.
Save
anyways.
Your money.
That article that you just read from was it from The Establishment, which is a brand new, awesome media and content site built for and run totally by women. It's pretty fucking sweet. They're, like I said, a company, multimedia company run and funded by women, that's predicated on a simple yet radical notion. The world is a better, more interesting place when everyone has a voice. And when one small homogeneous group runs the media, we're left with very skewed notions of the human experience. And so that's what they've got going on. And Ijeoma is one of the she's the editor at large for The Establishment, Ijeoma Oluwo, who will be on our show next week, her second appearance on the show.
Oh, she's the editor at large for the...
Yes, she is. So it's a big new gig that she got, and very excited for that. She's already had quite a few awesome pieces in it, and so I'm really excited to share that. I'll have the link to the site itself. They've already put out some amazing content already. They're fucking, if you follow them on Twitter, their GIFs are on fleek. They're just really good.
Yeah. So the article was Ruchika Tulshan, and she did have a good quote because you were talking about the institutionalization. So she wrote a book for Forbes and said, I found it fixing women was not the answer. There exist institutional challenges at every level that prevent women from being hired, retained, and advanced. I interviewed leaders and organizations of different sizes across industries and locations as far as India and Germany on what they were doing to fix gender inequalities. Apart from an impressive diversity track records, all had another commonality: senior leaders of both genders who are equally engaged in advancing women at their companies. Mm-hmm. And an all-male panel does that.
How exactly?
So we keep going back one way, you know, then the other way, back to women in color in tech. One of the more, I think, exciting pieces that I heard at the Women's Freedom Conference was from, and I forget what group they were with. Was it DDCOM? I can't remember the name of their organization, but
they're from Women of Color in Tech Chat.
Okay, I didn't know
that
was a
group.
Women of Color in Tech Chat. So they created a series of stock images of women in different and various roles in technology, and they're allowing it to be used free through the Creative Commons license, right? So the same way that open source things can be disseminated and distributed, you have to attribute it to them and use it in a certain way, but you can use it for free. So now these big conglomerates and ad campaigns, you have no excuses when you're trying to build material and images for your website to not include and promote women in color in technology roles. So I think that's amazing that they did a photo shoot of various women of color in tech roles and then made it open source and free.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's Christina Murillo and, oh my gosh, it's so bad that I can't remember the other Murillo. They're not sisters.
Right, they're both two Murillos that started. You're right.
Just Christina and I'll look it up while I'm telling you the rest of the story. But it's been interesting. Stephanie and Christina, that's what their names are. And it's interesting. They started the chat in June of this year as kind of like just an answer to the stuff that they've been dealing with being in tech spaces as coders and web designers and designers, generally speaking, not having people that look like them, not having a mentor that look like them, and like wanting to provide a space for women of color in tech to get together. And what happened was they saw this huge dearth of people coming to them, companies like, yeah, we need more women of color. Oh, we need more women of color. And I've heard this from a lot of people that like an ancillary kind of residual effect of the movement for Black Lives is that people, companies, industries want to seem like they're diverse. Yeah. There's this push, and I shouldn't even say they want to seem, they actually do want to be diverse. Okay, that's actually kind of a cynical way of looking at it. They actually do want to be diverse. They do have a desire, but part of that is
perception.
This perceptional look of like, you can't be like that anymore. Just like Eddie Murphy can't go on tour right now and tell gay jokes. It's not a good look. You can't do that anymore. Society has changed. And so part of this societal shift that we're in the midst of is this call for better representation, especially in these higher level and very highly visible company spaces. So it's interesting to me just seeing that, but it's kind of cool. And I think it's amazing that they did this.
Include the Flickr link, certainly for folks.
Yeah, I'll include the link.
It's 15 different women of color, the whole diaspora, Latino, Black, it's, natural hair, the whole thing's just unbelievable. And different, they're stock photos. It's what you need for these websites and campaigns and things, like in a boardroom with backgrounds. It's just that need was perceived and that they went and solved it. Just, I love that. That's a big, big ding for that,
Yeah.
And now they can grow on it. And they've got this, Women of Color stock brand, and they've got the chat. It's awesome. It's literally brilliant. I love it.
Yeah. So,
back to shitty mail panels.
Shitty mail panels. South by Southwest
got a real balance going.
Canceled a panel over numerous threats of on-site violence this past week. They announced a cancellation of a panel called "Level Up: Overcoming Harassment in Games." The members of that panel.
So that was a panel on online harassment that they canceled because of harassment.
Yes.
Okay. Just making sure.
They said in part, we had hoped that hosting these two discussions, the other discussion they canceled was called Save Point, a discussion of the gaming community, which featured some people that were involved in the Gamergate movement.
Oh, of course.
That hosting these two discussions in March 6th in Austin would lead to a valuable exchange of ideas on this very important topic. However, in the 7 days since announcing the two sessions, 7 days, let me just mention that again, 7 days, South by Southwest received numerous threats of on-site violence related to this programming.
And you know what it was? Gamergate is about online ethics and journalism. If you don't believe me, I'm going to come rape you.
Yeah.
God, I'm going to rape you at this South by Southwest festival, goddammit.
So South by Southwest prides itself on being a big tent and a marketplace of diverse people and diverse ideas. However, preserving the sanctity of the big tent at South by Southwest Interactive necessitates that we keep the dialogue civil and respectful. If people cannot agree, disagree, and embrace new ways of thinking in a safe and secure place that is free of online and offline harassment, then this marketplace of ideas is inevitably compromised. So
I just
cancel the panel harassment because of harassment, therefore validating harassment
as an effective tactic. Tool. Yeah.
Just making sure we got
good,
this
good
in
on you,
good,
South by Southwest.
Good stead.
And that had to have been, I don't run the thing. I shouldn't be throwing like, you know, comfortable barbs and arrows in my glass ass house sitting here, you know, downstairs. But there's just, I fail to believe that that was the only recourse. Canceling it?
It was the easiest one.
Yeah.
Well, there has been some follow-up. BuzzFeed is threatening to withdraw completely from South by Southwest if these panels are not reinstated. They say in part, we hope that you will reconsider the decision and reinstate the panel. Digital harassment of activists of all political stripes, journalists, and women in those fields or participating in virtually any other form of digital speech has emerged as an urgent challenge for the tech companies for whom your conference is an important forum. Those targets of harassment who include our journalists do important work in spite of these threats. BuzzFeed has participated deeply in South by Southwest for years, and our staffers are scheduled to speak on or moderate a half a dozen panels at South by Southwest 2016. We will feel compelled to withdraw them if the conference can't find a way to do what those other targets of harassment do every day, to carry on important conversations.
Yes.
In the face of harassment. We hope you can support the principle of free speech and engage in a vital issue facing us and other constituents of the event. Fortunately, you have 5 months to fix your shit. I'm paraphrasing on this part.
BuzzFeed, is that the lead?
We are pretty sure you can get your shit together and come to Jesus. Sincerely, BuzzFeed. So,
That's not an idle threat.
That's big.
That's a big.
BuzzFeed is very big in that world.
It holds some water.
Yeah, for sure. So, wow. Get your shit together, South by Southwest.
I can't.
Point haste.
I still just like, I don't know if it's like, what's the word I'm grasping for? The ultimate in either irony
it's
or hypocrisy?
Just beyond.
Or,
the irony is beyond.
Like you really, like you, and it's months away, right? It's 5 months away. So they said that there were threats physically. No matter what they're saying, I guarantee you that mechanism and delivery of every one of those threats was online.
Yes.
You know, so like you literally had an online harassment panel in 7 days after announcement that you canceled because of online harassment.
Yes.
And I almost guarantee you it's absolutely these Gamergate dudes, and I didn't even want to like talk about them. They're in their little 4chans and Reddits, and they're like, you know, there's a phrase we have at the company I work for called the vocal minority.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always mean that that's what's right for everybody. It doesn't always mean that that's the, and these are like nice people. These aren't like, you know, like horrible Reddit people. These are just disagreements that happen within our industry. And there can be a vocal minority, like a small group of people that just, you know what, I'm going to take over this dialogue by throwing so much into it that you have no other reason than to listen to my case. And it's an online thing. It happens in various groups. But, you know, so a bunch of GGers in the vocal minority shouted you down from a panel. God, that's ridiculous. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. They should be kind of embarrassed. In fact, you know what they should do? They should apologize.
I'm sorry. So sorry. So sorry.
So I don't know if you heard about it, but there was a band, and I forget where this band was. I'll have to get up and have my article. But they have a tradition where they give gift baskets back and forth, and they had a gift basket that included, shall we say, racially insensitive items for a school that was predominantly black, a school that was maybe 75% black. And their school is about 18 or 19% black. But
awesome.
I'll hopefully there won't be an ad and we can play this video, but I'm going to finish.
What
if
a nursing college?
Oh, dang it.
God damn it.
With the ads every time. You know what we need to do is get one of those like IP spoofers so they think we're in like, I don't know. Like,
Chechnya.
Yeah, somewhere they don't sell ads. Right. You know, like rural, like fucking awful stand.
Awful stand. No, that's terrible.
By halftime Friday night, the Atascocita High School band was focused on their performance. Nearly 140 members strong, roughly 30 of them seniors, these seven now in trouble.
We didn't do anything wrong.
Carolina Andaverde and her bandmate are heartbroken over what they face because of this gift. As a tradition, students exchange gifts with competing schools at varsity football games to encourage good sportsmanship. Last Friday, it was Summer Creek. Included in this basket was a small watermelon, coconut, pineapple, and watermelon gum. The district said it was racist.
I'm mixed. I don't take offense to that. How can someone else take offense to that?
They've now been told they'll be punished, which might include no more band. In the statement tonight, Humble ISD told us school administrators conducted an investigation and, after considering the totality of the circumstances, determined that the gift was inappropriate and lacked good sportsmanship. Atascocita High School will not tolerate racial insensitivity. These girls say they never dreamed the gift would have been taken that way, but still, they offer this.
We apologize. We never intended for us to make it seem like a racist joke to them.
So, This Week in Apologies. And you'll notice that it included the classic This Week in Apology hallmarks of, it's a deflection. You know, I didn't know it was like that.
I didn't
that.
Know it was racist.
I'm mixed and it didn't offend me, so how can it offend somebody else? No. That's almost like one of our cheerleaders' friends is black. But I have to, so on the 1 to 5, they actually did say, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, I'm sorry we hurt you. It was an actual, like, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And then they, of course, had to deflect with, we didn't mean it to be racist. I don't know what you meant it to be with watermelon and shit, but I'd say on the apologies, maybe like a 2.
Okay.
It was better than T.I.
Yeah, that ain't saying
much. I apologize to the women I know personally. All 6 of them. The rest of you chicks.
As I said, I apologize to all the women that have my personal cell phone number. all the rest contacts. Of you, fuck you.
I apologize to my contacts. And Oprah, let me add her in there.
She probably has his cell phone number. I'm bad.
But, so I'd say maybe like a 2. What would you give this one?
Yeah, 2.5 maybe.
All right. The school did, I guess, kind of right.
Yeah,
you know?
The school did. You know, they handled it. Whatever.
And you know, like, well, we didn't mean to be offensive, but like literally, like 1 out of 5 students at your own school is.
Yeah. What we're not going to do, though, I know we're coming up to Halloween. We're not doing any blackface apologies on the show. I just don't accept.
Well, I already made my flow chart.
I know you made your flow chart. I'm just saying, generally speaking, though, I don't accept. I don't care how great your apology is. You don't get to say sorry.
On the flow chart, the end is, it's never fucking acceptable.
Yeah, it isn't.
And on the way to that includes, what, were you living under a rock?
Yeah.
Did you not know about the historical context with which blackface has been used to demean black people?
Tell Julianne Hough that. She did that shit last year.
Yeah, she went as crazy eyes, for fuck's sake.
Because white people are...
White people got a white. Yeah. White people got a white.
So,
we going white. We going white.
Let's move on from this.
We always need a palate cleanser.
For sure.
I could just let that go for days. I just, that gives me life.
Yes. But we are here with some lame duck blackness from Obese.
We always are.
What's he got going on now?
I'll let him do the talking.
Okay.
Oh, there's going to be another ad. Oh, God. You know what they do? I cue these up ahead of time, right? So they're not there. They're not like the ads
are
there.
Oh, he's talking.
No, that's not him. That's the ad. It's the guy from Oracle. But they fucking,
fuck you, Oracle,
they
guy.
Refresh the page.
Oh, so, while you're like sitting there. It's we got you, bitch.
Bastards.
You gotta listen now.
Right. Trying to suppress people's wages. Our plans make sure that women are paid fairly for doing the same work as men.
Oops, sorry.
Which is why we vote for, not against, a law that would make sure women are paid fairly for doing the same work as men. As Democrats, our plans to combat climate change actually recognize the existence of climate change. And it's not just a matter of trying to solve avert danger. We see opportunity in jobs and moving to a clean energy economy. We want America to be out front. We embrace our responsibility to leave our kids with a safe, prosperous, habitable planet. As Democrats, we're proud that our plans to fix our broken immigration system are not rooted in anti-immigrant sentiment. They're rooted in what we know to be our own immigrant stories. We understand that America's greatness doesn't come from building walls, it comes from building up opportunity. Now, the good news is that there's a broad consensus within our party about what needs to happen, and what's also good news is the majority of the American people agree with us. But there's a danger coming up, and it's something that we're going to have to address, and that is complacency and cynicism. You know, a lot of times it seems like our politics don't reflect the common sense and decency that we see in our neighbors and our communities and our friends, and it gets frustrating. We've got a system that too often rewards division and polarization and short-term thinking.
Yeah, pause. I got to find where this Trumpy Cat comment is.
Outrageous thing.
What does he say?
It's here. Hold on.
Even though everybody knows they're not true, but we think of it as entertainment somehow. And so attention-grabbing and controversy is rewarded rather than folks who are rolling up their sleeves and dealing with sometimes really complicated issues that don't lend themselves to a soundbite. And so people get cynical. And sometimes folks just throw up their hands and say, Washington doesn't work, a plague on both your houses, everybody's dysfunctional. Your job.
Well, I'll pause it. He goes on to say, he ultimately calls the Republican Party Grumpy Cat. So he says, there is such a painting of a gloomy picture for the country. Overall, we're making enormous progress, and it makes you wonder, why is the Republican politicians so down on America? I mean, they're so gloomy, they're like Grumpy Cat. So I was trying to find the soundbite where he said Grumpy Cat, but it's really not even true because Grumpy Cat works for a living, and Republicans don't. Like, Grumpy Cat gets paid for, like, showing up and...
Grumpy Cat's badass.
He was at South by Southwest a couple of years ago and got paid.
I bet he was.
GOP, Congress, they don't fucking go to work for shit.
Yeah.
Do nothing, Congress. But so that was Obama throwing out his jabs. They're like Grumpy Cat.
Bam, bam, bam.
He's trying to be au courant, I guess.
I guess he is trying to be au courant. So Cat. I know we've had, like, multiple conversations about the fact that I was born in 1976, and I'm not a Gen Xer.
Right.
But I'm not a millennial.
Correct.
There is this middle generation. There have been many names for us. Generation Catalano, Xennials, the lucky ones I've heard as well. None of these names have really stuck, but I came across a technology-focused analysis of this generation and why we are kind of a weird amalgamation. So I thought it would be cool to kind of talk about it because I think you're solidly Gen X. Like,
is this supposed to be identifying Gen X? Or
no, identifying this me, the Xennials, the Generation Catalano. And it talks about what makes us unique because we're kind of a weird mix of things, which is... And most of that is tied, according to this article anyways, to our relationship to technology. We came of age, this is from Pop Sugar, at the very essence, just as the very essence of communication was experiencing a seismic shift. And it's given us a unique perspective that's half analog old school and half digital new school. So just by virtue of when we were coming of age, our childhood and our adolescence and our college years were at this like really big shifting time in terms of communication in the digital age. So they talked, the first thing is that we played Oregon Trail.
Totally.
A room full of Apple IIe's. That we would have played on, then you're part of, this is a cue that you're part of this unnamed generation, because Gen X individuals were already fully formed teens or young adults when computers became mainstream, and millennials can't remember a time before computers.
That's definitely me. And there was another game that was really popular. It was one of those, like, you had to, like, move from room, it was on, again, the Apple IIe, and you had to move from room to room and, like, type in commands, like, you know, look under bed, and, like, I can't remember the name of it. And then like Moon Patrol, but Oregon Trail was big.
Yeah, Moon Patrol, that's not our, that's not us though. That's before, because this is specific to computer. You're talking about video games, and that's something totally different.
But both of those are computer games.
They're computer games. Yeah, Moon Patrol was a computer game.
Absolutely, on the Apple IIe with the fucking like green blinking, like blink, blink, yeah. Blink, blink.
I know. I know. Space Oregon bar Trail left, was. Right, and touch all your head. Patrol. But they say that when we first placed our sticky little fingers on a primitive Mac, we were in elementary school whose brains were still curious sponges. We learned how to use these impressive machines at a time when the average middle class family were just starting to be able to afford their own massive desktops. And so this made us the first children to grow up figuring it out, as opposed to having an innate understanding of new technology the way millennials did, or feeling slightly alienated from it the way Gen X did.
And I'm also firmly in that. We got our first we went Betamax. We got a Commodore 64 at one point.
Nice.
And quickly changed over to the Apple. And maybe like, I forget, maybe after the 2E, the one after maybe the Mac. I can't remember. But so a friend of ours, Scott, my mom's best friend's husband, he came over to like, he was like all in like, had a PhD in like, you know, music and computers and shit. So he's all excited about like, oh, this is amazing. And it had a word processing program. And it was one of those ones like the old like DOS 2 commands. Like you had to hit like Control C. And right. Then you had to type like, you know, search Control F. And then you had to do this. You had to highlight the letter. And he was all jazzed about it. I'm like, this is a fucking giant pain in the ass.
Right.
It was absurd.
So the next one is an AOL adolescent who came home from middle school and head straight to AOL, praying that you'd hear You Got Mail after waiting for the painfully slow dial-up. Then yes, you too are a member of the Oregon Trail generation, and you're definitely...
And here's where I divert. AOL was high school for me.
Yeah. If you hopped in and out of sketchy chat rooms asking others for ASL, age, sex, language, location for the uninitiated.
Did you have an AIM name?
Yeah. We were the first group of high school kids to do research for papers both online and in an old-fashioned card catalog, which many millennials will never have heard of, by the way.
And I would say high school, I bet. In high school, we had a computer lab, but I don't know if the library research was fully online. I bet I was still using card, the Dewey Decimal.
Right. So we can quickly turn curmudgeonly in the face of a teen who's never written a letter, but we're glued to our smartphones just like they are. So this is another like tech, like we ride that line between being like, yeah, we wrote letters physically, but we also are totally like, yeah, smartphones are the bomb. So we were the last group of children to have a childhood devoid of all technology that makes childhood and adolescence today pretty much the worst thing imaginable. We were the last gasp of a time before sexting, Facebook shaming, and constant communication. We used payphones. We showed up at each other's houses without warning. We often spoke to our friends' parents before we got to speak to them, and we had to wait at least an hour to see any photos we'd taken. But for this group of kids just a little younger than us, the whole world changed. And that's not an exaggeration. In fact, it's possible that you had a completely different childhood experience from a sibling just 5 years your junior, which is pretty mind-blowing.
And I resonate with all those statements. And I, like, you're talking about texting and that. Like, I don't even think, I want to say, like, when I was in high school, like, they didn't even have cell phones. Like,
I know.
It was still beepers.
I didn't have a cell phone. I
didn't have a cell phone until I was out of college.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Napster U. So they talk about Napster being another big one. When we were the first to experience the beauty of sharing and downloading mass amounts of music faster than you can say Third Eye Blind, which made the adoption of MP3 players and music streaming apps perfectly natural. Yet we still distinctly remember buying cassette singles, joining those scam-tastic CD clubs, and recording songs onto tape from the radio. The very nature of buying and listening to music changed completely within the first 20 years of
our
lives.
Did you do that? I had 120 minute and it would go from one side to the other.
Yep.
And there was a show that I would tape, and I would tape the whole radio show on both sides of the tape. And then I'd come back and I had like a two tape deck. I get a different boombox, a dual tape deck, and I'd play the one tape and then edit the commercials out, find the songs I wanted, and put them on another tape and make like a radio mixtape.
Nice.
It was like so many efforts from like radio to tape to tape to, for fucking tapes.
Yep. The last thing was us youth untouched by social media. The importance of going through some of life's toughest years without the toxic intrusion of social media cannot be overstated. MySpace was born in 2003. Facebook became available to all college students in 04. So if you were born in this magical period, for 81, 82 even, you were literally the last graduating class to finish college without social media being a part of your experience. So when we get together with our fellow Oregon Trail generation friends, we frequently discuss how insanely glad we are that we escaped the middle school, high school, and college years before social media took over and made an already challenging life stage potentially hellish.
I'm just kidding. And that is exponentially.
Exponentially hellish. Yeah,
yeah. I would say for little Andy, like I've told you, and I don't know if John listeners know, but like I was a dick. like 10, 12, like I was a total, like there's like, you know, like, oh, that's the vacation that Andy ruined. Like that's the, like, oh, we left early because of Andy. Like we were in California on the highway and I got pissed and just got out the car. It's like, right. I'm out, deuces. Like I was not a pleasant individual, right? And social media, oh my God, I would have been like, I'm not saying I had it hard, but like I was awkward and unpopular without Facebook.
Right.
Like awkward and unpopular, and then like Facebook and Snapchat and other shit. Nah, I would have it would have been exponentially less comfortable.
Right. So we grew up in a time where we could talk shit about each other, took pictures of ourselves doing horrible things and spread rumors, but it never got past just our circle of people. But unlike our older Gen X siblings, we were still young and dumb enough to get really into MySpace and Facebook in its first few years. So we understand what it feels like to overshare on social media and stalk a new crush's page. Time after time, we late 70s and early 80s babies were on the cusp of changes that essentially transform modern life, and for better or for worse, it shaped who we are and how we relate to the world. So I thought that was really interesting. I really related to the entire thing, and it's such a, I think technology is the differentiator in those instances. Yeah. You know, and
I would say in that regard, and I don't know to what extent this, like, so there's the average individual, and then, like, you know, me, like, pretty wealthy enclave, like, you know, my school, you know, we had computers well before most schools did. Like I would have been on the earlier end of that. And that's maybe why, even though I'm older, I still identify, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think people that are my age didn't have computers in middle school. Right. But we did, because I went to a pretty wealthy community. So maybe that's why sometimes I resonate more, even though I'm on the older spectrum, because I skewed younger with some of those things.
Yeah, for sure. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, we have that, I don't say debate a lot, but,
yeah,
you know, maybe it's not a debate, but discussion.
Yeah, discussion. Well, I think we definitely, like, the years we are separated were, we didn't go to high school at the same time at all.
No, it's a big difference.
And it's a huge difference. And it's a huge difference at this particular time in our you know, societal history as well, which this article illustrates, that it's a critical 5 years that we have apart. So it's interesting.
That's true. It's not 5 years. It's 4 years in a bit, but it's an important 4 years.
That you're even pointing that out?
No, it's not even 4 years. I'm 72, you're 76, right? So it's not even 4 years. It's 3 years in, like,
but
seven
just
months.
Enough. But because
you said 5 years, it's now 3 years, 7 years. What was, you know, come on. You were off by a factor of quite a bit.
Whatever. Bad boys, what you want, what you want, what you gonna do? When should the sun don't come for you?
It's a short one this week. Sheriff Clark, you all know from Fox News and the fake war on cops. And I just... And
dude, it's the worst.
Well, and like, I'm not trying to like say like as a black guy, he's good, bad. But like, it's just like anytime there's a black person that's speaking out against Black Lives Matter in this sort of way, the media holds it up like, I swear to God, like people pass it around like snuff films. Like, oh my God, look at this black guy that's speaking out against. But anyway... Dave Clark, Sheriff Clark on Twitter, before long, Black Lives Matter will join forces with ISIS to being down, but I think he meant bring down, our legal constituted republic. You heard it here first. Like, I can't tell if it's like, is it parody? Is he just like trolling and being controversial and stupid because it's working like Trump style? But like, literally, he thinks Black Lives Matter and ISIS are going to join forces to bring down our constituted republic. Really? And like, that's got like 1,000 retweets. Fucking asshole.
Mm-hmm.
I wish he'd just
go away.
Go away. Sit down.
Go away.
Sit down. Well, go speaking of shitty ass people, where's my.
It's a GOP clown car.
So I had originally was like, oh, we should, you know, the debate was last night. We're recording on the 29th.
Yeah, fuck that debate.
That's what I'm saying. I don't want to fucking talk about that.
I think I read this morning that the RNC chairman said it was a terrible debate.
Stop.
I'm not joking.
Stop.
He was like, he tweeted, CNBC should be ashamed of that debate.
Well, I did see there was a bunch of yelling, shouting, and the moderators didn't
do a good job. But it was like at the last debate. It's a joke. Honestly, we talked last week about how Donald Trump's entire like stump speeches are just comedy shtick. So it would follow that it would look like a shit show in a debate format. He's not ready to debate anybody. He can't even say anything. Come on.
I'm huge. I'm number one. I'm the champion. Debate over.
Ridiculous.
So, and again, I apologize. I know we don't like to be talking about people of color, but I had to put this in there. Ben Carson's wife, I'm going to air quote, sings the Star Spangled Banner.
She swears she could sing, though. I'd be seeing her singing all the time. She sang at that, like, crazy other thing he did too, and I think she plays some sort of instrument.
Let's let her. She did, but let's let her do it in her own words.
Okay. Does he think that sounds good? The fact that he lets her do this on national television is concerning to me, because it just shows like a level of like inability to be honest with the people you're supposed to be honest with.
Yeah, well,
because I'm sorry.
No, I think just like his entire presidential run now has really made me like question the like rocket scientists and brain surgeons are the smartest people around, because he just that notion is not.
He just it's not. Ben, I don't know if you, I'm sure you won't be listening to this, but if anybody listening, like, get in touch with him.
It's a little unfair to her to let him be going
out there.
Don't
do that. Don't put your wife out there like that. She shouldn't be singing on MSNBC, period. Yeah. Like, don't. Don't do that. It's not right. It's not. No.
So while trying to find the right clips and various things for her to sing there, this actually played, this ad, and I'm just going to play it. It needs no intro.
Okay.
You would not believe the motherlode I just dropped. And that's how I like to keep it. Leaving not a trace that I was ever here, let alone that I just birthed a creamy behemoth from my cavernous bowels. Nothing is worse than stinking up the shared toilet at work, or the toilet at a party, or your lover's apartment. Of course, flushing removes the graphic evidence. Maybe two or three flushes if your skid marks are as tenacious as mine.
Ew.
But what can be done of that subtle scent of a 300 cow dairy farm? Aerosol air fresheners aren't the most effective option, or the healthiest. Trying to mask the stench, giving you a nice blend of ChemLab carnations with just a touch of feces.
Oh my god.
So, how do you make the world believe your poop doesn't stink? Or in fact, that you never poop at all? Poopery. Poopery is the before-you-go toilet spray that has proven to trap those embarrassing odors at the source and save relationships. Simply spritz poopery in the bowl to create a film on the water's surface that actually traps the odors in their porcelain prison. And when your little astronauts splash down and make contact with the film, they release poopery's pleasant aromas so all those around you can smell as a refreshing bouquet of essential oils. Yes, it is a real product. And yes, it really works.
Yo, I bet you that shit works like mad.
On Amazon alone, there are over 1,000 reviews rating it 4.8 of 5 stars.
No surprise.
That's a better Amazon rating than the iPhone 5. If it doesn't completely stop your stench from spreading, send it back for a full refund. Our unconditional stink-free guarantee. If your poo stinks, click here to get your poopery today at poopery.com. So whether you need to pinch a loaf at work, cut a rope at a party, or lay a brick at your boyfriend's, your days of embarrassing smells or prairie dogging it are over. Poopery. Our business is to make it smell like your business never even happened.
Yeah. First of all, that commercial's hilarious. Secondly, I bet you that shit works like mad. Just scientifically speaking,
it totally makes film sense. On the
electric
water.
Essential oils would totally be separate. It would completely like cover anything escaping them and would release smells at contact. It's fucking brilliant. It's got, and totally low tech.
The actress, if you could tell, had a British accent.
Yeah.
She's like a very pale white woman in like a blue party dress with pearls and red hair and shit, sitting on like a crapper at this party in her workplace. Awesome. It's got over 34 million views.
As it should.
I can't believe I hadn't come across it till now.
Let me get some poopery. Up in here.
You know, I'm not saying your poo doesn't stink, but that's not your problem. Like,
no.
You know, if you're going to, like, maybe.
It's not. I just find it interesting, though.
Well, I mean, if you got, like, irritable bowel and you're pooping a lot.
Or if you're, like, traveling or if you're in an office, you know, we don't work in an office. So that's something you don't, like, think about. We don't have to think about it.
That's true. That's
good luck to all of you. Poopery
yeah, you know, leaders. When we did have that one office that had the bathroom that had a sliding door.
Yeah.
It was like, dude, you just sprayed all that stuff. It just. We all know you were in there for 20 minutes taking a dump.
Yeah,
like
you took a newspaper, man. Come on.
You
we
took
know what's
a what?
Going on. A newspaper,
you
dude. Took a newspaper. We know what the fuck's going on here.
We know what the deal is.
So
dude.
You hipped me to.
Well, hold on.
White people.
Oh, yeah.
I get
gotta get the intro.
I can't wait till I'm a cop so I can bully you. White people. Hey. White people.
So, yeah. This weekend, white
so,
people.
So, yeah, you hit me to what has been referred to as the most racist field trip ever. And I'm not even going to talk about it. I'm going to let the individual who was subject to this field trip tell you his story himself. So I'm going to let Kendall tell the story of his sharecropping field trip. Here we go.
A racist field trip I have ever been on in my fucking life. They took us to a fucking cotton processing place. And there was a big ass cotton field out in the middle of fucking Raymond, Alabama, in the south of Montgomery County. We went there, and me and 28 other little nigglets in Miss Harper's third grade classroom, they took our asses out there in the middle of the fucking August heat and said, hey, y'all, they gave us bags and shit. Like little cute little plastic bags. With a cotton puff person with a smile on his face, and they're like, "Hey, y'all go out there, have fun, pick as much cotton as you want." And so my stupid ass went. You know, I went. My mama signed off on it and didn't think about it. And I went to the fucking field trip. Out there in the field, just having a good old time. We were singing songs and shit in the middle of the motherfucking field, picking goddamn cotton in the middle of the fucking heat. And then, you know, I'm thinking, because it's a field trip, they told us you can pick as much as you want. Hey, you get to keep the fucking cotton. You can keep it. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to keep it. And we go to get back on the bus. They're like, all right, kids, turn your bags in. And they take our asses inside and took all the damn cotton that we had. And then told us to get back on the fucking bus. So me being a little rebel, I took a handful of cotton, stuffed it in my pocket, and went home. Then my mama came when she was doing laundry the next night. She was like, what the fuck? Is this cotton in your back pocket? I was like, yeah. Where the hell did you get unprocessed raw cotton from? Well, yesterday on that field trip, they took us to a cotton processing plant, and we got to pick cotton all day long. My mama came to the school, and I swear to God, that shit went down. She locked this woman in a room like, how dare you jive-ass motherfuckers take my kids and all these other ashy little Negroes to a fucking cotton field in the middle of the summer? You fucking soulless bitch. She fucking checked me out of school. I didn't go to school for 3 days buying that shit. She said, I don't want to have to look at that bitch. She was pissed at everybody. Yes, that was the most racist shit I've ever gone through in my life. I didn't even understand what was wrong until the next year. I didn't even understand. I just thought we were just going to go have some fun in the field. So fuck that shit. That was fucking sharecropping if I ever seen it. Fuck that shit.
God damn it. Fucking white people.
So Thank you, Kendall, for sharing
and
your story.
Shout out to his mom. They're like Baltimore Mom of the Year. Yeah. I put Kendall's mom for Mom of the Year.
Kendall's
my
mom
was pissed. She locked her in a room for like three. She didn't go to school for 3 days.
She gets it for sure. So we'll talk about some TV and movies. Supergirl premiered.
I really fucking dug it, man.
And I liked it. I really thought they did a good job with it. I'm excited to see the second episode. I thought for a pilot I thought they really struck a good chord. It's just a tinge. Like, it reminds me of The Flash, and it's like earnestness, but still like, you know, had a little bit of gravitas, a few twists there with the sister. I liked it. I liked the whole thing. I thought it was really good.
I thought they did a really good job in a lot of different ways, but specifically the... you know, like, so the other different incarnations, there's been no tights, no flights, like, other different, like, you know, rules or whatever. They were, like, right away, like, nope, she's Supergirl. We're making it to Supergirl. This is her origin story. And then they gave her, like, confidants. Like, usually, like, those four different people that know about you and who you are, you wouldn't get that for, like, the first season. Like, think of other shows, like Smallville. How long did it take Clark to tell his best friend? Like, three seasons. Right, like,
yeah, and I think that that shows an evolution of the audience and television in that regard, because when you mention that whole no flights, no tights thing, it was like the brand's reluctance to allow the television to sully their brand. And now we see shows like Arrow and The Flash and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and now the Supergirl, that's like the exact opposite, where the brand's like, no, TV can tell these stories in a much more authentic way as they were originally told in serial format, because we're talking about comic book stories that were meant to be told in short bursts. So to me, it's such a great medium for it. And I think that these shows are doing such a good job. I hope, even though they're on different networks, it would be cool to see a Flash Supergirl crossover situation. It would be kind of sweet.
What's Supergirl on? Do you know what channel?
CBS.
So they can't, because CW and CBS are owned by
Viacom. Right. So I bet you they will.
I think that there's... I saw another CBS CW crossover this week.
Oh, you did?
It's Bones and...
No, that's Fox.
Oh. No, it's not Fox.
Yeah,
it's,
that's Fox.
No, but there was another one that wasn't Bones. It was a CBS
and Sleepy Hollow were crossing over, but that's not
Fox. And it is Bones as well. Those are You're both right. Fox. And Bones does that shit all the time.
Yeah,
Bones. But no, CW and CBS are owned by Viacom.
Don't call me Bones.
Doesn't mean they're the same production company, but...
No, but I it would be interesting. They're both DC, so maybe it'll happen.
And you said this the other day, like, man, DC can really knock out the park with a TV show, but fuck up a movie.
Yeah,
man.
They could fuck up a movie, for real. For real, they
could
fuck up a movie.
Is DC have their own... Like, Marvel's its own studio. Did DC do the same thing? IPO?
I think they're Warner Brothers or something. Weird.
Because I know when Marvel did it, like, they went, like, I think IPO and raised, like, $1 billion, and they did it right.
Yeah, it's something weird.
They had to buy some of their franchises back. Like, it was kind of wasn't easy for them. But I thought Supergirl was a great pilot. I think it's got a lot of promise. I think it's terrific that they've got a woman superhero, you know. Like, next year you said Ijeoma's coming on and she's got her badass feminist coloring book. Like, I think having women superheroes and women in roles in that are great. Just great for all of our nieces and little girls out there. And I think it was a good show to boot. I thought they had good, you know, plot and... whatnot, especially like you said, for a pilot, high hopes, and it got great ratings. Like, I think like really good ratings, considering it was on.
Yeah, I think it had really good ratings.
Is it going against Gotham?
Gotham, but that ain't say much.
You know the truth right here about Gotham. I just deleted 3 episodes from our DVR that we didn't watch. We stopped watching it.
We don't watch that show no more. I don't think anybody will.
It's almost sad.
It's just bad.
It's bad.
It's not sad. It's just bad.
Well, and we keep pumping up, and it keeps fucking delivering. Fucking Muppets, man.
Yeah, the Muppets
crack
show,
me up.
If you're not watching it, you're missing out.
It's really adult, and it's fucking humor. It's not that it's not for kids, but like I felt like before it was slapsticky and kids, and then there was like a couple of jokes for the adults. This is for the adults, and there's a couple of slapsticky things for the kids. Like Miss Piggy's trolling ass fucking song when she was apologizing.
Oh my
to
God,
Reese
she was trolling so
fucking
hard.
Hilarious.
She rapped. I can't even. Miss Piggy's the goat. She's so good. It's not even funny.
No, it's definitely very, very witty and well written. And I think even the humans that come on the show have all done a pretty good job. Reese was, you know, fairly decent. It was good. I like it. Muppets have been on point. The shrimp with his fucking. What's he wearing? The gold necklace and his fucking turtleneck, and they're making fun of his shit. But it's good. So while you were gone, I spared you. I don't know if I told you this. You know I'm the king of like making you watch like shitty ass, like crappy fucking movies you don't want to watch. So I rented Jurassic World. And my review in a word? Don't. And it got like really like high on fucking, you know, the goddamn fucking Rotten Tomatoes, like the 75-80% range for people and critics, but it was just I guess it was like cool on the big screen, maybe in like 3D or fucking IMAX would have been even cooler. Like it had pretty decent special effects and the dinosaurs did like chomp a couple of people in half and shit, but it just seemed like, and I don't want to spoil it, but the ending was like, what? Come on, it's just stupid. The whole thing just seemed not interesting. I wasn't mad that I watched it, but you would have been pissed.
So yeah, because you always pick shitty movies.
I said
I'm
the king of shitty fucking
the king
movie picking. You would have been
yeah
displeased.
Yeah, and we're giving a quick shout out to Movie Channel Reviews and Chris Fett over at Sanity Check. I was on this week's TV show review with them for The Flash because I just loved this week's episode, which delved into some, you know, some interesting waters of subtle racial bias, which I appreciated. And we had a great discussion about it. And I thought it was
really
good. Is that
out or is that a premium?
No, that's out. It's out. Okay. You can watch it now.
You recorded last night?
Yep, we recorded last night. And I believe it's up now. I could check.
And I do. We talked about it right away on The Flash that they had the two. First, the new Firestorm, I guess you call it counterpart. They were both black. But then there was that whole, like, you know, this guy versus that guy. And there was a lot of, like, I don't want to say dog whistles, but framing and phrasing from, yeah. I forget the girl's name.
Caitlin,
about ultimately Jackson.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was they're very much like the,
we
the
said,
Harvard versus the thug.
Yeah. Chris and I thought it was the blackest episode they'd had yet. So we appreciated it. D-Palm came over to see our way of thinking because he wasn't too on board.
What other episode would they have that's blacker?
No, this was the blackest one.
I know. I'm saying, well, I don't know why you would argue that.
No, he wasn't arguing that. He didn't like it as much.
Oh, he thought, was he offended by the overtones?
How about you listen to the show and you'll find out.
Where's my...
So you can check that out. You can go to movietrailerreviews.net to check it out, or just search Movie Trailer Reviews on iTunes or Stitcher. And I think we're coming up to the end of the show. So again, we'd love to get feedback. So leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. You can find us Interracial John or our website interracialjohn.com. You can find me at Leslie Mack MAC. You can find that dude at Very White Guy.
You will leave us a review. You will leave us a review.
Yes.
You will leave us a review.
Yes. I think that's it.
Good night, everybody.
High five.